I'm Brian.
And I'm Griff.
And this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace.
Good job, Brian. And this is episode 171. I knew you could do the intro on your own.
It only took me 20 practice tries.
Well, practice makes almost perfect. And because, Brian, it's officially our holiday break here at eBay, this week we're featuring two past seller conversations from 2020.
Fantastic. Who are the sellers?
Well, from August 2020, we'll revisit the conversation we had with eBay seller Adrian Lavoie, who's a sneaker seller on eBay. And the second one is with eBay sellers Corvatus, also known as Q. She likes to be known as Q. And Carlo Lawrence of QC Consigns. Their whole business is high-end consignments.
I know Q, and well, I shouldn't say I know them, but I know of them given how much we've had them on this on the podcast.
Yes.
And we also had them on, I want to say, Up and Running Grants.
I think they won a grant.
Yes.
Oh, good. Now they get more money to invest in their business.
So how do you select which sellers to feature?
Well, it's a good question. If the information from a past conversation with a seller is timely and it's still relevant and it's about running and managing a business, then it's a candidate for revisiting. Otherwise, you know, because I go through these now looking for possible segments to use, but if they're not timely, then I can't use them. For example, we have some great segments on managed payments. All that's past now.
Right.
So it doesn't make sense to kind of revisit those. So if it's not timely, if it doesn't make sense
still,
today.
If it's not relevant.
If it's not relevant, exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're a future guest, come with a topic that you think will have legs.
And arms will help too. And a head.
And then maybe Griff will pick you 2 years from now after you've been on the show in 2022.
You know, I didn't think about that. And when we did our first Best Of show, the people that we had on were like emailing me saying, oh my heavens, thank you so much. And I thought, it's just a rerun. But you're welcome.
Yeah, but it is. It's good for them. They get a little bit more exposure and hopefully their sales get a little, you know, boost.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if our audience of buyers is that big, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's true. We are talking to sellers, aren't
exactly.
we?
Exactly. It's usually a quiet week here, Brian, between Christmas and New Year's, but is there perchance any eBay news you want to share?
Well, actually, there is. Every year at this time.
The most wonderful time of the year, by the way.
It is. Mm. Yes, the most wonderful time with all of the holiday cheer and eggnog with rum like my wife likes it.
Yum.
And time spent pent up in a small overheated house with friends and family.
Oh, it's paradise.
This most wonderful time of year is also the time when postal carriers give their customers a gift by announcing their annual rate charges.
AKA
rate changes, I should say.
Rate,
but they tend to be charges too.
Yeah, well, they're also known as rate hikes, but in PR, we don't use that. Yeah, I suppose. Anyway, it's that
rate hikes.
And it's that time. They have indeed announced, or more to the point, pre-announced their rate changes for 2022. Yeah, no surprises there. So give us the bad news, why don't you?
You're awfully pessimistic there, Griff.
Nah, I'm just resigned. The only things that are certain anymore in life are death, taxes, and annual postal rate hikes.
On the plus side,
okay,
the price of gas has been going down, so there's that.
Yeah, always looking on the bright side, Brian. I don't know what's with you. So let's get through.
It might be the eggnog.
I had no idea you showed up to work in that condition. Let's get through these, shall we?
Absolutely. First big news is that as we approach the end of the holiday peak season, the carrier-applied rates and surcharges will be ending soon.
Mm.
That means USPS will return to standard rates December 26, 2021, while some FedEx surcharges will remain in place until January 16, 2022.
Like a good affair. It was fun while it lasted.
I may not touch that, but all things must pass.
Said George Harrison.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Let's review the rate changes by carrier. First, the USPS changes, effective January 9th, 2022. Rates for the following USPS shipping services will increase. Priority Mail and Priority Mail Express will see a 3.1% increase. First Class Package will increase by 8.8%.
Yikes!
Priority Mail International is going up by 3.7%. And first class package international service will rise by 4.2%.
Gee, those are not insubstantial increases, especially 8.8. That's almost 9% for first class package.
That's a pretty significant increase.
Yeah. I wonder if another carrier will look more appealing in light of these increases.
It could be. So let's continue.
Okay.
As for FedEx, effective January 3rd, 2022, rates for FedEx Ground, FedEx 2-Day, FedEx Home Delivery Services will see a 5.9% increase, and FedEx Ground Economy will be going up 6.9%.
Gee, not so economical.
No. And remember, shipping surcharges and fee changes may apply to your shipment and affect your total shipping rate.
Well, that's not as much as a jump that's happening with USPS, but still.
A jump is a jump.
Oh, yeah.
But wait, there is more.
Oh, no.
For UPS, the news is much different. Oh. UPS rate on eBay labels for all services are not increasing at this time.
Well.
They're like me. They like good news.
Okay. Fantastic. I like
it. Are you using UPS, Griff?
Actually, I'm glad you asked because I am using it more and more. I find UPS Ground to be competitive with the other services like USPS First Class Package. Packages are getting there just as fast. And now with this rate increase, the dollar difference is not that big. In fact, it's actually economical for those items. Most of my items are between a pound and 2 pounds.
Okay.
Makes more sense. So I'm going to keep using UPS, I think.
Yeah, if you're less than a pound, you're probably still USPS.
Yeah.
But UPS, what about getting it to UPS, or do they pick it up from you?
No, they don't do pickup, but it's not that hard for me. And in fact, it's actually a good thing. I can just drive downtown. It's like 5 minutes away, and there's always parking in front of UPS, but it gets me out of the house. I think we've talked a little bit about the fact that I've become an agoraphobic. I don't go out. And this is forcing me into the car, driving double mass now, and going to UPS. Takes me less than 10 minutes there and back. And it's a good little outing and, you know, it's baby steps to rejoining the world.
Get a little sunshine through the windshield.
I take vitamin D. I don't need that stuff. Hey, what about eBay? What about our delivery services? What changes are happening there?
eBay standard envelope rates are not increasing, but there is a new 2022 rate card for eBay international standard delivery.
Yeah, and I see there's a link, so we'll put that link to the page with the international standard delivery rate card for 2022 in the transcript for episode 171. Before we move on to our conversation, best of conversation, Brian, what's your take on this year's announced carrier rate changes, quote unquote?
Well, nobody ever likes rate changes, right?
I guess, yeah.
But I'd keep in mind a few points.
All right. What are those?
Rate increases impact all sellers in all marketplaces. So if you need to increase prices to keep up with the rate increases, you're not alone.
Yeah.
And all sellers will have to make these adjustments.
That's a good point. And a lot of times when I talk to sellers, they think this is going to really hurt me, and not thinking that it's actually—
It's universal.
It's universal. So a rising rate impacts all boats.
Correct.
That's a terrible analogy. I'm sorry.
Well, at least you didn't go with sinking boats.
Well, no, I wouldn't do that. I draw the line somewhere. You know, the mail I would get, the emails would be nonstop.
You did want questions.
I did. I do want questions, but not nasty, angry ones.
No, that's true.
And notice that the podcast is still here.
Yes, it is.
So I teased last week that if we didn't get any emails, maybe
and
we should.
You got some commentary.
Oh, boy, did I ever. There were people saying, oh, I can't believe you're shutting down the podcast. And then I realized that my sense of humor sometimes doesn't translate. I got to be careful.
You do.
Yeah. There's no podcast anymore. And your second point, what's your next point, Brian?
So every year we implement all changes to postage rates on the site at 1 second after midnight of the day the rates go into effect. And this year will be no different.
Right. So sellers don't really have to do anything if they're using calculated shipping.
Correct.
If you're using free shipping or flat rate, you might want to make those adjustments as needed prior to the actual rate increase so you're all in place. That's why I love calculated shipping. I don't have to make those changes. What's the third point you've got, Brian?
Well, for the USPS rate changes, keep in mind that U.S. Postal Service filed notice with the Postal Regulatory Commission, or the PRC, and the PRC has not yet approved those changes. So there could be alterations to the actual rate increases themselves.
Right. I know from a conversation I had on Facebook with a seller yesterday that one of the most concerning proposed changes for the USPS is the introduction of a surcharge, apparently, for items over a certain length. And I think it's substantial. I think it was like $10 or $15. He claims that the surcharge is going to hit a lot of his inventory when it's time to ship it. I advise that he might consider looking at another service like, UPS.
Did he say how long?
Yeah, he did. And I tried to verify it. I couldn't really find any information in time for the podcast, but I'm sure he knows what he's talking about.
Because I just think of like, we have a lot of sellers who sell things that are relatively small or lightweight, like a golf club.
Yeah.
But they've got a decent amount of length. And I was wondering if like those types of sellers would be impacted. They should at least look into it if they use USPS.
Oh, absolutely. And he was also concerned about return cost. And I didn't really realize this. In eBay labels, if the seller doesn't provide a label, eBay usually defaults to the USPS option, even if the item was originally shipped by another carrier like UPS or FedEx. So I did a little digging, and I believe I have a solution for him and for any seller, and we're going to talk about that in episode 173, so make a note of it, which will be a lot about shipping. In fact, I think it's titled Shipping Options to Save Money. I'm going to explore this specifically with UPS. About providing your own labels easily so that you, at that point in return, can upload your label at your cost to the buyer, as opposed to, in this case, if the item has a surcharge of $15 or so, not have to have that, eat that charge as well. Any other news, Brian?
That wasn't enough for you, Griff.
According to this,
it was enough for me, but I do think actually there is a fun little post in the announcement section about items that went viral in 2021.
Oh.
So hopefully our sellers have already seen it, but it was posted by Jordan Sweetnam, and it's an interesting read. Jordan says, "This year's list is nothing short of remarkable. We saw a collectible crochet congressman raise $40,000 for Meals on Wheels."
I think that was the Bernie Sanders one.
Yeah. Yes. Little crochet doll.
Yeah.
The Queen of England's gaming console fetch, $300,000.
What?
And a pair of Michael Jordan autographed kicks. Listed for $250,000.
Okay, I can understand the shoes. The Queen of England had a gaming console. She played video games?
Well, I don't know if she plays them, but maybe she does.
I need to know more. I just got this picture.
Maybe she got them for her grandkids when the boys were young.
I like to think of her sort of in her throne room alone with the controller, you know, playing on her PS5.
I just saw a little episode on her. I didn't realize that during World War II, she used to drive trucks for the British Army.
Oh, yeah. And I think until recently, I don't know about now, but when she would go like to one of the, what is it? Not Windsor Castle. What's the other one they go to? I forget now. The one that's in the countryside. That she would regularly get, you know, put on working clothes, getting in her Jeep and drive around. This is a no-nonsense woman.
Exactly.
She's one of the most amazing personalities of the 20th century. She'll go down in history. So whatever you think of the monarchy, she's incredible.
She and Rudolph, they'll both go down in history.
I wonder if she sells on eBay. I should send a note. Hey, Queenie, we'd love to interview you. No, thank you. I'm quite busy. Well, Brian, before I get carried away, thanks for all that news. I think it's finally time that we take a trip in the eBay for Business Wayback Machine to August of 2020. 2020. 2020. Continuing with our mini-series, 25 Seller Stories for 25 Years of eBay, we return to our good friend up north, Canada, to meet our next seller whose story was selected. Adrian Lavoy sells on eBay under the user ID Board Shop. That's BoardShopW. So Board Shop W, all one word. Welcome, Adrian.
Hi, Griff.
What do you sell on eBay?
Mostly shoes. So branded shoes. I'm thinking about either Adidas, Puma, ASICS, and other well-known footwear brands. To start from the very beginning, I started to work for a company, a bicycle shop that used to sell on eBay. That was back in 2005. And well, I was, I think, 15 years old. And I was kind of at the right place at the right time because the owner had the gut to start selling online. And he started to sell on eBay. As I wasn't as good as a mechanic as a internet geek, he assigned me to the online sales. So for the listings, taking pictures and customer service. So that was my first experience with eBay back at that time. In the meantime, after a few years, I basically knew how everything worked in terms of transactions and even international transactions, because we sell a lot to the United States from Canada. And I started selling a few things here and there as a sideline.
I see. What year would this be?
Well, probably 2006, seven, a year or two after working there, I started to use eBay a little bit more. But the shop itself, my shop, started officially in 2011.
So you started out working for someone else. Did you find that was really helpful when you transitioned to your own store on eBay?
Oh, yes, yes. As I started just personally for myself, I kind of tried here and there and selling. I did a lot of bicycles, so I used to sell bicycle parts or even electronics, so iPods or iPod Touch in my younger days. That was a lot of trial and error. But when I started with eBay for my store, eBay is really easy to use and user-friendly. So no, it was really easy to go and very smooth.
Starting off with, it sounds like a little bit of everything, including electronics. How did you end up selling shoes on eBay?
Well, I didn't want to sell bicycle parts or try to bypass my old boss. I was with a partner at that time, at the very beginning in 2011. And we were trying to find something that was interesting to sell, something that we liked as well. And it was very difficult to find some distributors, even Googling online. It was very difficult. So we tried with whatever we liked, outdoor stuff, camping gear. And that friend of mine liked a lot skateboarding. So he contacted a few distributors. And one of them positively saw our business opportunity. And we met him in a parking lot. And it went from there.
So that was when you ended up selling skateboards at that point.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. And this is why the name is Board Shop W. We started with skateboards. And that company was selling shoes as well. So we started with skateboards, but we purchased a few pairs of shoes for ourselves and for a couple friends and family. And we saw that the shoes sold well. Shoes are easy to ship. They can have a good value. Yeah. They're quite light, so it's easy to carry even in the warehouse or receive large quantities. So I think it's the perfect item to sell online.
It is a good item. I actually enjoy selling shoes myself, but it is not easy finding sources of shoes to make a viable business. Wasn't that a challenge in the beginning?
Yeah, well, so we started in 2011. And we were having some difficulty. I mean, we had maybe two distributors, but of course we needed more to find more inventory. And a lot of the distributors didn't want to do business with us since we didn't have a storefront. They didn't want to sell to anybody who was doing business from their basement, which is understandable. When I finished my bachelor's degree, at that point I was alone in the business. I had gathered enough sales to rent a commercial location, a main street. So I used that as a warehouse, and I tried at the same time to have my bricks and mortar store work efficiently. But after a few years, the store itself didn't work out that well. So I was just using the place as a warehouse.
Sure, of course. But your distributors don't necessarily know that. So all they know is you have a location on Main Street.
Exactly. But I'm not there anymore. But at a certain point, we made our case. We purchased a lot of shoes. We were a great customer. We paid them immediately. So after a while, their terms kind of went down and they kind of tossed it. And hey, the online thing is there to stay. So let's continue doing business.
Does your distributor provide you with the brand names that buyers search for and demand? I know it's not that hard to find sort of generic shoes, but they're generic. And isn't it a brand name play here?
Yes. I'm a small business. I'm not a marketing whiz. I'm not too used to SEO. So I wanted the easy thing to do. And selling on eBay is, first of all, easy. And then afterwards, getting the branded products is quite easy. People do their own research. I didn't have to do much. The difficult part was to find the distributors and the right products. So yeah, that was the difficult part, of course.
In the supply chain, when it comes to the brand name shoe manufacturers, and of course, we're talking about names like Nike, New Balance, ASICS, all the, you know, the big names. Have you ever been able to purchase directly from them, or is it always just through a distributor?
from one company to another differs. Some companies, like Adidas, for instance, they're huge. They're a huge company. Yeah. So technically, we purchase directly from us. Their representative are in-house, so they work for Adidas. Smaller brands or other brands that don't have as much power as Adidas maybe have smaller distributors, or they have representatives that have different brands. So maybe 5 or 6 footwear brands.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit difficult to find online, and you kind of have to make some calls. And after a little while, it gets a little bit more easy because everybody knows everybody in the footwear branded products. Now we kind of made our names and we can ease a little bit through more easily.
I think a lot of sellers don't actually consider that aspect of nailing down a supply chain that's consistent. And a big part of that is being known, networking, and establishing personal connections with people from these various companies and distributors. It's not always easy, but it's not impossible.
Exactly. And I had to go the traditional way as well, and to go to footwear shows. I think I went in Toronto to find some new brands, and I did the typical thing. It was the first time I did it, but I had to go to little tents where people and reps were and make contact and talk about my business and do my little sales pitch. And it finally paid off. I mean, it was quite interesting. Yeah, no, it's a really cool thing to do, but it's the difficult part for me.
Yeah, it's not easy. I think even if you're made for that activity, and there are people out there who are just, that's what they crave, is being salespeople, selling their business. If you don't have it, it's still a skill you really need to acquire if you're going to be able to compete, especially in a category like athletic shoes.
Yes, exactly. And actually, a friend of mine who's already doing business online for something completely else than shoes, but he wanted to open a different portion of his business. And I think he wanted to go into not beauty products, but like shampoos and stuff like that. Oh. And he was asking me, like, what do you do to contact these people? I can't find the distributor online. Or who's importing those products in Canada? And I told him, man, you need to make some calls. You just have to ask everybody, ask the right questions, and you'll be able to find somebody or a company that can sell the product to you. But you need to make calls.
Yeah. And calls, especially right now. I know that there's nothing quite like meeting face-to-face with people at something like a trade show. But trade shows are kind of on hold right now with the pandemic. So this is not an easy task to pull off, especially today, where you're going to have to make the calls so you can establish those personal connections.
Well, right now, more than ever, sales reps are basically waiting for people's call. I'm calling some people right now that maybe said no in the past for selling me some shoes. And I'm like, hey, I'm calling back just to do a little checkup. Do you want to sell me some shoes now that it's going not that well in physical stores? And people and companies are opening their minds a little bit in that term. So I think it's a great opportunity. Right.
When you started with shoes, did you have a personal affection or passion for shoes yourself? And if so, have you established your own personal collection?
That's a great question. I wasn't a sneakerhead at that time, but I did a lot of mountain biking in the past and downhill mountain biking. And in those years, people were basically wearing skateboard shoes to use for their big flat pedals. I was kind of indirectly looking a lot and wearing a lot of skateboard shoes. I kind of had not a passion, but I was very interested in those sports styles shoes, but I didn't have my collection really. At one point, of course, I was trying to invest all my profits back into the business. And at one point you're like, oh, I just received hundreds or thousands of shoes. Maybe I can pick one for myself. And I started doing that a little bit. At one point, I was like, I have too many shoes. I can't. I can't really do that all the time. So now I probably pick like one pair per year, and that's about it.
I like to keep active as a seller because it keeps me in the know of what sellers go through. I have developed an interest in shoes over the last several years.
What have you sold?
Yes, I sell. But what I've done is I'm not a large volume seller. I keep my eye out for closeouts or liquidations online. And then I'll purchase these shoes and I'll hold them for a year or two. I actually put them in my garage and just store them away for a year or two. And I find that even though the trends change, once they're no longer made, they do go up in value, even just the, you know, pedestrian shoes, because people want to buy a second pair that they liked, but they're no longer available. I've always thought if you ramped this up and you had the capital, it may actually be a viable business model buying shoes and holding on to them for 2 years. But I see also there's probably some inherent risks, like getting a trend wrong and saying, yeah, there's a reason why those were closeout because no one wanted them.
But it's funny that you say that because it's close to what I'm doing. I specialize in closeout deals and end-of-line products. So especially in Canada, we're maybe a little bit late in terms of getting the shoes there. And sometimes, well, first of all, we're a lot less sellers in Canada than in the United States. The market is a lot less saturated. That's good for me. But I purchase closeouts, end-of-line products. And sometimes what I see is there's nobody selling that shoe anymore because it's probably all sold out. So basically, just like you, I put on the shoes online and people are messaging me like, hey, do you have that size? I love those shoes and I had them for 2 years and you're the only seller do you ship to whichever country. And yeah, it's a part of my success, of course.
I always wondered if the major shoe manufacturers figured this out. They probably already know it. It's just probably not a market they feel they need to address. But suddenly they start making it possible to recreate shoes on an endless basis, which would put you and I kind of in a really precarious position as business models. But they haven't figured that out yet, or they just don't even care, I suspect.
They probably don't even care.
Are there aspects of your business that connect to your personal life in a way that they help fulfill? I know a lot of the sellers that we've talked to have, for example, either they have a special charity or they have a special interest outside of business, and they've managed to find a way to connect those two. Has that been the same for you? Do you have a connection like that?
Well, I guess that when we ship a lot of shoes, we get a lot of returns, and sometimes the return can't be sold back online. Or they can, but it's maybe not worth it every time to sell and list every single pair of shoes we return that are a little bit used.
Yeah.
So what we do each year is we donate the shoes each year close to Christmas, I think. And it's a little place that's in my town, my hometown. And last year we gave a bunch of winter boots and other shoes and the kids. We received some pictures afterwards of the kids getting the packages. That was great. Since our sales went up, we have more used shoes to give out.
Exactly.
So we're going to give them out again this year to the same place. And I think that's good. I mean, we could sell those back, but for the time, it's just easier to give everything. And it makes a bunch of people really happy.
Right. And not to take the focus away from the altruism and the generosity that you exhibit, but there's also a business angle to this, I assume, in that
we get a credit. Yeah.
You get a tax credit because you've donated and you get to write that off. So it's not
on top of that.
You know, and I think it's important to bring that up only because, Adrian, a lot of our sellers are so fixated and obsessed with not wanting to take a return that it's a bad experience and it's going to ruin my business. And if you're really in business, that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. You can always turn this around so that you either can write it off as a loss or you can say that you donated. And this, in the long run, over the year, will help your business.
Yeah, exactly. It took me a while, though, to kind of accept that people were returning shoes either used or it's a small percentage of people that do that. But it's just the cost of doing business. And I had to accept that. And well, do I need to close my business because a few people are returning used shoes? No, it's just the cost of doing business.
I mean, it's understandable. No one wants to have to take a return regardless how big their business is. We want everything to be perfect, but it's just not the nature of retail.
Exactly. I know. And it's a great question to ask yourself because people are purchasing more and more online and big companies are, I mean, I'm a small company, so I received some shoes. I can't even imagine the quantity of used shoes that big companies are receiving. And I'm wondering what they're doing with it.
That's a good question. I suspect they do have some sort of channel where they liquidate and then people are purchasing them and reselling them as slightly used or no box, you know, if they show no wear.
Probably, but I haven't figured that one out yet.
Well, there's the next step in your journey.
probably, yeah.
Of course, it's a completely different market when you're selling something that's not new in box. If it's not collectible, a collectible shoe that a sneakerhead's going to be searching out, then that's a different market, and it may not be profitable in the long run.
It's a different market, but I'm sure that I could assign an employee to that at one point, and it could be worth it, especially because another point of shoes is they always keep a certain basic value, even if a shoe is purple, even if a shoe is a weird or very ugly. I mean, everybody's willing to pay $20 or $30 for just a pair of shoes that you go paint in your house or you go outside. So I think that's a good point.
And if there's any one place that I've discovered where beauty is definitely in the eye of the shoe head, it's in shoes, because I've seen some really ugly shoes that I wouldn't go near bring lots of money, and people wear them. And I think, well, more power to you. I would never put them on. But my own weakness is green shoes. My favorite color is green. I think it's a lot of times it's the hardest to find. So I'm always on a quest for my own. I have a small collection, and it's all green shoes.
But and there's sports style or
streetwear? Mostly things like New Balance or Adidas or Asics. It's a funny thing with me and my feet. Nike's never felt good on my feet. So I'm not a huge Nike collector.
Hey, I hear that a lot. People have their own specific brands that they like.
And
yeah, it's a personal thing.
I think it's because I have 66-year-old feet now. They like comfort. They want to be in, you know, they love Skechers. They had to slip right into them. So how has business been for you in these last few months during what is, I know it's an overused term, but really unprecedented. None of us in our lifetime have ever gone through something like these last 6 months of a pandemic. How has business been for you?
At the very beginning, just at the point where they started to close everything, we saw ourselves probably go down 40%. I was lucky enough to be an online seller and continue selling kind of as usual, but also they were closing down tons of stuff. And well, here in Quebec, in Canada, there was a list that we were waiting, and a lot of the states as well sent out those lists of business that could keep doing business. And we were waiting anxiously for those lists, and we were fine. One of the stuff that everybody could keep doing is online selling.
Yeah.
So we were fine, but still the sales went down 40%. But the good thing is we're a really small business, and I try to keep it effective and efficient. So we could have survived that for month and month and even years. So that was fine. But after a while, maybe when they started to hand out the checks and the money, and then we saw our sales go up, and they're even higher than what we expected for that year to be. So now we're doing great, and there hasn't been much difference for us. We're only 4 employees plus myself, and if we have a big warehouse, we have 11,000 square feet. So it's easy for us not to bump into each other or even keep our 2 meters.
Yeah, and it's a very important point you made, which it's beyond the scope of what we usually talk about on the podcast, but it is a business concern when it comes to something like emergency pandemic stimulus checks going out. Remember, as you just said, they go to people who then spend that money and put it back into the market. And that stimulus isn't just going into their wallets. It ends up having a payover effect into many different businesses who then have enough sales to go out and buy more inventory or keep their employees online and working. And those people are able to then go purchase things. So the stimulus is not just for that one person receiving the check. That stimulus goes on and on and on every time that money is put back into the market.
Yeah, of course. No, it's, I think it's a good thing. I saw it on my end, more sales going up, but I'm online too. So
there's a lot of uncertainty right now about how long our current situation will be in play, whether or not this will lift by the end of the year. Maybe they find treatments or vaccines, or there are people discussing this could go on through next year as well. Are you making any contingency plans for your business should the pandemic continue beyond this year?
As I mentioned, it's not much of a big difference for us. We saw some changes, maybe a little bit, but it's complicated to see where this will go because more people are purchasing online, but fewer workers maybe at the distributors, or even maybe if it's made in China, Vietnam, or Indonesia. It depends on many countries, many factors. Even just thinking about getting the boxes from the boxes to ship the products into, it can be very difficult if this business shuts down.
Yeah.
But I must say that I was quite lucky in all of that, and that hasn't changed a lot. I just cross my fingers that it continues like that and that we can continue doing business and grow as much as we can.
If somebody were to come up to you and say, hey, it seems you're doing pretty well, I'm not going to compete against you with shoes, but I certainly would like to start running a business online. And is eBay a good choice? And if so, what advice would you give me as a new business owner, new seller coming on to the platform for the first time?
Well, even if you're not an eBay seller and you're not on the platform at that point, I would tell you to go on eBay because that was my personal experience. That's where I started. It was easy for me. It was risk-free. It was just really easy. And if I had to start all over again, that's where I would go. And it applies to not only shoes, but tons of products. I would certainly tell somebody to go on eBay, and it's really user-friendly compared to other platforms that I've tried working with. So no, thumbs up to eBay, of course.
Well, I agree with you, but I'm biased, so... I like to hear it from somebody else occasionally.
And you, and eBay isn't paying me, so
right.
It's really from the heart, and I do appreciate a lot what eBay has done.
Thank you. And believe me, every 2 weeks I'm amazed that I get paid for what I do because it's so much fun. So and part of it is talking to people like you, Adrian. So thank you so much for congratulations on being selected out of thousands of people for those 25 slots. And thank you for talking to us.
Thanks for having me.
We've been speaking with Adrian Lavoie. His user ID is BoardShopW. That's BoardShopW. You can find all you need when it comes to shoes on eBay at BoardShopW.
I really loved that interview. That's why I selected it.
It's amazing what he was able to do, especially during the pandemic and all of that.
Yeah, he kept his liquidation and sourcing strategies going and adapted them so he could meet the challenges of running a business during 2020 was just really difficult. I think 2021 was pretty hard for a lot of sellers, but not nearly as that was a year that'll go down in the history books when it comes to every aspect of
especially
life.
I mean it was almost like everything fell off a cliff, you know, in March and then you had to recover. Amazing. I'm glad you brought that one back.
Yeah, I like that interview. That was a good one. Well, we got another one.
We do. Now let's step back into the phone booth of time to September of 2020 and learn how a seller couple leveraged consignment selling to build a successful business on eBay. On eBay. On eBay.
A few months ago, we asked our seller community to submit their stories to us, and out of the thousands that were sent in, our seller team selected a top 25. Each week here on the podcast, we feature one of these 25 sellers. This week's sellers are Corvatus and Carlo Lawrence. Their user ID on eBay is QC Consigns. Welcome, Corvatus, and welcome, Carlo.
Hello.
Hi.
Now, I hear that, Corvatus, you prefer to be called Q.
That is correct.
All right, so I will call you Q. Carlo, do you prefer to be called C?
No, but you can call me anything, but I'm not late for work, according to the CEO next to me.
I will not call you. That is up to Q to call you into work. So first off, where is your business located?
Our business is located presently in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And you've been selling on eBay for how long?
We've been selling on eBay now for 7.5 years now.
Carlo, what do you sell?
We sell anything from a light bulb to diamond rings. We have such a range. We are what we consider a lifestyle brand.
Now, your ID is QC Consigns. Does that mean that you take consignments?
That is exactly what that means. We are first a consignment company. So we actually will take in pre-loved items from anybody, such as individuals just like yourself.
How do you arrange for that? How do you market your business so that you get people to take their items to you?
All of our marketing is done on social media. So we pretty much make sure our product is shown out there in the resale market through Facebook, Instagram, places like that. And then there's that old fashioned just word of mouth recommendations from others who have either consigned with us or heard about us from someone or some way or another.
Carlo, do you run this business out of your house?
We have a warehouse where we store probably 95% of our inventory and usually stuff that's very valuable in terms of jewelry stays here with us.
For safety's sake.
Correct.
When somebody has something to bring to you for consignment, they've seen you on social media, they've contacted you.
where do they meet you to hand off the items?
Well, that's a really good question. There's actually two parts to it. If you don't live in Charlotte, North Carolina, you have to mail your items into us. And the really cool thing that we have is if you are a first-time consigner with us, and this is your first consignment box that we're taking in, we'll actually give you back up to $50 off the shipping cost to ship your item to us. So that's one. So that's a really awesome deal. And then the other, if you do live in Charlotte, we have what we call a concierge service. I shouldn't even say Charlotte. I should say all of North and South Carolina. We have a concierge service, and that's where presently my husband, who's the rep, will go out and pick your items up from the desired location that you've asked us to.
So you go to the person. They don't come to you.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Do you give this concierge service to everyone, or is it just to special clients?
It's actually given to everyone. Oh. So no matter how small or how large the pickup is, we will give it to you. The only stipulation is that you have to live within North Carolina or South Carolina.
Right. You're not going to fly to California to pick up a load of things for me, necessarily. Well, but I can ship them to you.
That's actually not true. So we do have high value customers that we do fly out to. Like presently, we're planning a trip right now where we're going to be heading out to a really sunny state. And we're going to be working with several high value clients out there and picking up items. So we'll be driving there and driving all of the merchandise back. My husband just recently was in New York delivering a very expensive item to a high value buyer. And so, you know, we do make accommodations like that. And that definitely is for our high value clients. When we say high value, that's anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 client.
It makes sense that at that level of value, you would make these special efforts, like actually driving to a customer.
Yes. And also right now, COVID plays a great part in that, as you know. So everything is seamless in terms of contact and, you know, mask wearing, gloves, and meeting outside the client's home instead of inside, just to protect everyone.
If you're driving to New York at this time during a pandemic, what are some of the steps that you have to take to keep yourself safe while you're in transit from your business location to New York City?
Well, I would continue to do the same things I'm doing at home. Wearing my mask, washing my hands constantly. If I have to stop to get gas, I am going to make sure that I sanitize before I get in my car again. As far as food, just try to take items that I don't have to purchase, you know, limit my going into any establishment. And that's the best we can do because that's a daily chore, so to speak, for us.
I think part of it, too, is just tied to making sure that the turnaround is very quick. For his New York trip, he actually flew out with the item and he went literally directly to deliver that item. And within 24 hours or less than 24 hours, he was back on a plane.
Carla, what was that like being on a plane?
It was actually a little bit nerve-wracking at first because, you know, you hear they're going to have a space in between you. Fortunately, I went first class due to some miles benefits we had, and the person next to me wore a mask, and that was a requirement to American Airlines. I should not give them a, but it was perfect. They offered beverages, but I said no. But other than that, you know, any little noise, a sniffle, everyone's looking around. So it was kind of strange. It's like, where are you going to go? You can say, hey, stop, let's get off.
I have to tell you, I think the most nerve-wracking thing was for us as a family to make the decision to do it. This time. And then what do you do afterwards? So the whole thing, self-quarantining for 2 weeks. Well, we don't have a business that would allow us to self-quarantine for an entire 2 weeks. So that was always difficult. It was like, okay, what happens with him once he comes back? And it was a little comical when he came back because he went to give me a hug and I really wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if I wanted to hug him or not, but all is well. We're all very safe and healthy. And I think he did a great job at being as safe as he could be.
The other problem that we're seeing, and it's getting worse right now, is actually delivery. If you're using USPS, for example, it's much slower than it's been in the past. When you sell an item and it has to ship through USPS, do you mitigate that with either communication or resetting expectations for shipping delivery estimates?
So what we try to do is we have changed how we ship. So we still use USPS, but we now will choose priority 1 to 3 days, even if we're not using a priority USPS box. And we will go on ahead and pay the little extra on the shipping that maybe the buyer didn't pay, just so that that item gets to them. We've also started ticking the box to require signatures for everything. So in the past, we only did that for items that were $100 or more. Anything that's $50 or more, we've been putting insurance on. We've taken those extra steps. We've also loaded an app on our phone that has helped us track it besides eBay's tracking. So we can literally see on a map with this app where the item is. We just had a really interesting issue happen. Something left our warehouse on July 2nd. The buyer just got it 2 days ago. They live in an area on the East Coast, and it should not have taken that long. It got stuck in Greensboro for days on end. Because we had that app and we had eBay's tracker, we were able to contact the buyer first. And I think that's the key, is the logistics around making sure you know it before they know it. And every few days, we stayed in contact with the buyer. Carlo opened a case with USPS, so we showed that information to the buyer. So the buyer knew that we were constantly working on tracking the package. Now, we don't do this often, but one of the things we will do, depending on what the item is, we will sometimes offer shipping paid back to the buyer as a refund for inconvenience. But we don't offer that up front unless it's an extended period of time like this, where you're up with 15, 20 days. So that's what we have been doing to kind of combat some of that. And I have to tell you, we got an amazing, amazing review from that buyer once they did get their item.
What is this app, if you don't mind? I think our sellers would be curious to know.
Yeah, it's called Shop.
S-H-O-P.
S-H-O-P. Yep, it's called Shop. And it's awesome. And it links to your PayPal account. It links to USPS. So anything that we run through USPS or PayPal, and it links to all of your emails that your transactions go through. It's amazing, an amazing app. And it's not just USPS, it's UPS as well as FedEx.
A lot of sellers, for example, use eBay to print their labels. Will it connect that way as well? Because as we're moving into managed payments, some folks are opting in to have their labels paid from pending payments, for example. And does it still work with those?
Yes. Yes, it does. Oh, so good. We presently today will print our labels both through eBay and through PayPal. So we've tested both ways and it works. The other thing we've done to change is we offer cleanout service. So a part of our consignment service is to allow us to help our clients clean out their closets, clean out their cabinets, and really understand what should they consign with us, what should they give away, and what should they discard? Because sometimes it can be an overwhelming and daunting task, but they know they want to make a little extra money and they want to do more than just throw their items away. We no longer can do that because that requires us going into the home. Yeah. So since COVID, one of the things we've had to change with that is we now do it virtually. We'll do it through FaceTime or we'll do it through Zoom. And we get to literally live enter the client's closets and their home, and it's contactless and it's amazing.
Do you ever see something that would be considered inappropriate and just pretend it's not there?
We have a lot of times. Yes. Yes, we have. It's comical. And usually the seller, the consigner, will see it before we do. And, you know, we try to just make a joke out of it, make it very light and keep it moving.
My motto is see no evil, hear no evil.
Exactly. I was just thinking, would I let you into my closets? I think we're safe. I think we're safe. A lot of folks in the past who have run or considered starting a business on eBay that is consignment-based have a common question when they're setting it up. And that question is about contracts. So you're taking items from consigners, and there is a trust involved here. But also, I'm assuming that you have a contractual arrangement with your consigners. What does that look like?
Well, it's an 8-page contract, believe it or not.
I can believe it.
It is. It's an 8-page contract. And outside of all the legalities of things, what's in that contract is a very detailed itemized list of the individual's items. Along with that is a price range, a resale price range of lowest to highest of what we can sell that item for, because the resale market fluctuates just like the retail market does.
Sure, yeah.
We will also make sure that we put in their time and action of when certain transactions are to happen. We let them know that the contract is for 1 year. We also let them know in the contract that they have the option to extend the contract. They have the option to keep the contract open, which means we won't create a new contract, but it's open and it's an at-will contract, which means they can close it or we can close it at any time, returning their items to them.
Yeah.
It also lets them know what type of insurances they have. What are we responsible for at what time of receiving or accepting their items? So we let them know that once that item is in our possession, it is insured by us and we are in full, complete responsibility of their item until that item is sold.
Carlo, is there a minimum of what you'll accept an item based on value? So if I have a $5 value item, are you going to say no?
Yes, we would say no. Technically, if you look at the numbers across the board, anything less really than $50 is not really beneficial to a business model for us to use. That doesn't mean we don't have items that fall into the category less than that, but it's less than that than we experience. So sometimes, a seller might get consigned with us, say 10 items, and two out of them, they're good items, they just fall short. We will bring it on sometimes, but on the most part, I would say 90% of the time, we're going to tell you no.
As a part of a package, if there's a really juicy item in there that's high value, then you'll...
It's a little give and take.
Yeah.
So we do estate consignment as well. We have presently right now, I think one just closed. So we have 3 estate consignment contracts. What that means is that the person is deceased and their estate has decided to consign with us. Or maybe the person is selling a home and pretty much a majority of the small items in that home is being consigned with us. And so those are times where you kind of get those below $50 items. But when you look at the contract and the contract is probably worth $15,000, you're not going to look a gift horse in the mouth and say, no, I'm not going to take this $10 item.
And also sometimes you got to be sensitive to the situation.
Yeah.
Some death, divorce are the 2 things that you really have to be
Or loss
sensitive.
Of job.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's been a big one. That's what's caused our company to actually survive during COVID is the fact that so many people lost their jobs and were looking for an additional source of income. That was one of those moments in time for months where we took pretty much anything anyone was selling just to help them out.
What is your pricing structure? What is it that you charge your consigners?
What we have is we have a commission base, and that commission is split based on the sale of the item. So it's a 60-40 split. They get 60% of the sale, we get 40% of the sale.
Actually, in talking to people, that's a reasonable commission. I've heard of people that it's 60-40 the other way.
Yes, actually there are. They will rename nameless, and they're very popular. And they were actually people we actually used to help build our model. There are also consigning companies that will, based on the sale price of your item, change their commission. That also will happen too. We don't fluctuate in that way. It's just a straight 60-40, even if the item is $10.
I think if you've ever sold on eBay, you realize pretty quickly that anything less than that, you're just kind of treading water because it is a lot of work what you do.
Yes.
Exactly. It is a great deal of work. We have to take into consideration the logistics of running the operation as well, not just what we're doing for the product with marketing and other things like that.
Do you collect as well? Do you have your own personal collections or is everything game?
What do you mean by that?
Well, I've been in the antique business for years, for example, and I know of most antique sellers also have their own little collections of things that they've come across where they've kept them for themselves. And do you have that sort of collection?
As a matter of fact, very early in the start of our company, we made a decision, a pact between us that we would not shop our own supply. we would not shop our own inventory. And really and truly, my husband put that in place for me.
Oh, okay.
Please don't edit that.
No, we'll leave it in.
So no, we don't have a side collection, but I will say this, we do consign some of our own items.
To your own business, yeah.
Yeah, so there's roughly about anywhere at any given time, about 1%, half to 1% of the items are ours.
Did you start out on eBay with this business model, or was it a different business model where you were finding things to sell and then selling them?
We started out with a slightly different business model. We started the company because it was a need we had to clean out our own closets because we had downsized so greatly our living space that we just needed to do something with it. And my husband was threatening to throw it all out. And so at which point I thought, well, I buy stuff on eBay. I think I'd be smart enough to sell it. And the process was so easy. That's how we got started. So really, we started out selling our own stuff on eBay. And then once other people heard about what we were doing, they asked us to do it for them. And that's how the consignment business was born for us.
A seller is listening and they're curious about the business model. And they're looking to maybe start a local consignment business model that where they sell product on eBay for consigners. What would be your first bit of advice to them? Besides, don't compete with me.
It's funny. We're getting ready to do a 4-part series on that to help other people build consignment businesses. So I will share the one thing, and that is be patient with the process. Resale is just like retail, and it's a soft market and it's finicky. And because there's so many of us out there and so many platforms to put your merchandise out there, the resale market is extremely saturated. So it's feast or famine at times. And you could sell and sell and sell every day. There could be numbers of orders waiting for you to ship out. And then you could have those weeks or days where there's nothing. So I think you have to be patient with the process and making sure that you understand you're in it for the long haul and don't be discouraged by those dry spells because they will happen. Sustainability is tied to your ability to stick with it.
Where would one go to see this series that you're doing on starting a consignment business?
It's actually on most social media outlets. YouTube is the main one. So we do have a YouTube channel and it's called QC Consigns. But we also share those videos out on Instagram and Facebook. Those pages are also our name, QC Consigns, as well. So we're really easy to find. But we do have how-to videos on there. We have our Wind Down Fridays on there.
We'll put the links to all of your channels in our podcast transcript so that if you're listening to this, just go to the episode number 108. Look for that episode in the link, ebay.com/podcast. Look for episode 108. And in the transcript, we'll have all these links. I'm going to assume that given the level of business you're doing, that you're both pretty booked. Is there a plan to grow or are you happy where you are now?
We are growing, actually, and we do have plans to continue growing. And yes, there are two main entities in the business, Carlo and I, but we actually contract out to individuals to do other things for us. So whether it's production, whether it's photography, whether it's listings, we do contract out. So that's how we get our extension of support. As far as growing the business, our goal is really new customer acquisitions, whether it be on the consignment side or the buyer side. And so how we plan to do that, we are actually in pre-production right now for our first social media commercial. So we're excited about that. We have our Survive the Summer giveaway that's coming up, and we are going to give away five $100 Visa gift cards to individuals that follow us, like us, and share our posts on all the social media sites that we're on. So the goal really is about brand recognition for us. It's about as much as we can getting our brand name out there and becoming a household name in the resale market. And then lastly, we're working with copywriters and a website team to help us build our blog that's going to be a part of a mailer, which is something we've never done before. We've never touched the consumer via email. So that'll be a monthly issue that goes out. So we have a lot planned.
Lots of plans.
Lots of plans, a lot of things in works. But really, it's just about new customer acquisitions and brand recognition for us.
What's the most expensive item that you had the pleasure of handling through your business?
There's a top two.
Yeah.
A top two. Okay.
The most expensive item was a Cartier watch for $28,000.
Yikes.
The second most expensive was a 6-carat diamond ring for $26,000. And they were fairly back to back within the same time frame of one another. And it was in our earlier days.
But it can always happen again.
Oh, it definitely can.
So if you're looking to consign your watch or your very valuable piece of jewelry, then this is the place to go. QC Consigns. Again, I'm going to put all the links both to your eBay store, to social media, and to your YouTube channel in our transcript so that people can learn from you And if they need to, they can contact you to perhaps sell their items for them.
Awesome. Thank you.
I want to thank you both for taking the time out of your busy day to help us here on the podcast. Very interesting story. And continued success to both of you.
Thank you, Greg.
Same to you, Greg. Thank you.
We've been talking to Corvatus and Carlo Lawrence. They have a consignment business on eBay under the user ID QC Consigns.
What an amazing couple.
Q and Carlo are wonderful.
Yeah, Q and Carlo run. That's a great business model. And I'm surprised a lot more sellers don't adopt that. You really don't have to pay for inventory. You just put out that you're looking for high quality inventory. And I'm sure it's slow to get that trust going.
It is.
But they've managed to make it into a really viable business model.
And it's also interesting. I've heard from some sellers who do that as well, where they get pushback from people who think, oh, it's too much. Like, I'm giving away too much of the cost.
Well, you can set your own rates.
Right. But then what buyers fail to realize is the amount of work that goes into listing and selling and doing it.
Exactly.
And Q and Carlo have clearly built a reputation of doing that in a quality way.
Right. And it's nice to have an expert who's got the experience doing that work. You get better results and you don't have to think about it. So, yeah, I think, yeah, you're going to pay a commission or a percentage of the proceeds to the person who's doing the work and taking it on consignment. But in the end, is your time worth that money? And a lot of times it's just a really confusing process for a lot of non-seller first starters, you know?
And with them, they've got a process set up, so it's all more efficient for them.
Yeah. I'd love to have them back on. Hey, Q and Carlo, if you're listening, I may contact you to double check, see how you're doing. And in fact, I believe they're one of our recipients for the
up and running grant. They are with the most recent up and running grant recipients. Oh, good. Yeah.
So we got to check in with them. Brian, that's it for this edition of the Best of eBay for Business podcast. Our regular episode format will return next week, January 4th, with episode 172, when we meet a seller couple who were among the 50 recent up and running grant recipients. And you know them well, Nyla and Rich Syok of Appealing Signs.
That's great.
Yeah.
A couple from the Chicago area, because they're not technically in Chicago.
Elk Grove.
Yeah. Yes, just outside. That's great.
We've known them for years. Yes. We've been to their meetups in the past. They have their own event every year called Ecom Chicago. We'll ask them about that, how that's going, and find out how the business is going and the whole process of applying for and then, surprise, surprise, being picked for one of the as one of the recipients. And I want to say up front, because it's also in the interview, I had nothing to do with it. I'm not on the panel. No. I don't select guests. So
it's nice. I'm not on the panel either and don't select who the winners are either. But I had the pleasure of actually being able to call one of the winners.
Oh,
and
what fun. Them.
So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Hey, $10,000. It's not chump change.
Exactly.
Right. Hey, Brian, I want to thank you once again for coming in. This is officially your time off to help record with this podcast. It was really a pleasure and an honor. And looking forward to 2022.
Me too. And thanks. It was, I thought, 2021, given all the ups and downs, was a good year.
We're back in the studio.
Back in the studio.
That's a start.
Definitely a start. Community overall was successful. Good leadership. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, enjoy your time off. I know you're taking the next 2 weeks off. We'll see when you get back.
See you on the 10th.
On the 10th. Okay, great. And we'll see you, sellers, in the new year with our next episode 172. Please, oh, by the way, we didn't put it in here. Remember, you can always send your email questions to podcast@ebay.com.
Well, that's true. I mean, no questions. Griff might just cancel the show.
No. Or you can phone them in at 888-723-4630. And we really love to get your questions and we'd love to hear from you. So please do.
Yes, please send a question in because I would like to come back and co-host sometime in 2022. And if you don't send the question in, Griff has threatened to cancel the show.
And this is all I do. And that means I have to quit and I have to retire. And we don't want that.
No, we do not.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.